France. That's 10,000 one-day international runs for this master.
And that can't be taught.
Stand up and salute this run machine. He's been unbelievable in the last 3 years.
She's a good player, and he loves the battle against Australia. Kohli on the charge.
Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant.
Exactly what the Australian public need to see. A lot of Kohli.
Hi all, welcome to yet another episode of Cricket Unplugged. So now we had two months of outstanding cricket in the IPL with Mumbai Indians claiming the title for the fifth time. So now with that behind us, all the focus now is on India's upcoming tour of Australia. So pretty high profile series. And considering the times we are in, it's the first series in India in 8 months. So it's lots to look forward to, lots to talk about, lot of aspects to cover. And it's my pleasure to have two people who have come on Cricket Unplugged earlier on separate episodes, two in the same show. Tonight, in this episode, it's great to have Manjunath and Abhinav on this episode. Welcome, welcome both of you.
Thanks, Raghav. Pleasure being here.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah. Yes, so as I was saying, and I guess congrats, Abhinav, that again Mumbai, but it was, I guess, kind of expected that Delhi could have given a bit more of fight, but yeah, Mumbai Indians are just too good. So anyway, hearty congratulations. 5 IPL titles is no joke. So that's a great achievement for franchise. But so to begin this episode, so I wanted to know, everybody has their own fond memories of watching cricket in Australia, especially India-Australia. So I clearly remember the previous episode which I did with my brother Varun as well. We spoke about getting up in the morning at 5 o'clock to watch the match. We could watch only one session in school days or college days. Or like my brother mentioned that when the matches started at Perth, it used to start at 8:30 our time. So it was impossible to watch even a ball live. And then the Channel 9 coverage itself, the way the scorecard looked, all very distinct experience for Indian viewer watching on TV. So I would want to know your personal experiences and any fond memories of India-Australia. I would say especially any commentary or such kind of thing off field, on field we'll anyway get to it soon. So I would start in alphabetical order. So first Abhinav.
Thanks for having me, Raghav. And like you said, I think my also is at 5 o'clock and watch the test match on if it was happening on the Eastern Seaboard, or and at 8 o'clock if it was happening in Perth. Those are some of the that was quite special, that was like very early, and it's taking up a and waiting for the entire that common panel that was there. I mean, probably one of the best. Ben Omar, Phil Laurie, Ian Capel, Greg, that fusion quartet was such a when it started, when Charles Woods said on that format had which had these guys, Harsha Bhogle, Ravi Shastri, Alan Wilkins, Sunil Gavaskar, Vaseem Akram, and Ian Chappell was also doing commentary since with the ESPN star team at that time. So that, I mean, those are the beautiful memories that I have. I mean, watching, getting up early for the test matches on the eastern seaboard of Melbourne, Sydney, Adelaide, and Brisbane, and on the ones, and 8 o'clock at Perth. Those memories are special. I mean, hearing the entire that panel, the commentary panel, Benno's repeated, the silence of Richie Benno and the way he used to type the action, his trademark line being too in his distinctive voice. So, I mean, fabulous. Fabulous.
Marvelous.
Yeah, I agree with you that opening up with Richie Benno and Bill Lawrie, followed up by Michael Slater, Tony Gregg, Mark Nicholas, those kind of commentators, I don't think we are going to find in world cricket anytime in the future, I guess. That level of expertise, command, of course. That was little bit biased if you look at Mark Taylor or Ian Healy. But I'm not sure there's any commentator in India or BCCI who is not biased towards India. So I won't blame Mark Taylor for being biased. This is one of the criticism I have heard growing up. Mark Taylor, whenever he comes on air, or Ian Healy, even if Australia are 111 for 9, he will try to blame the pitch or try to say that things didn't go as per plan, try to deviate reality, which was Australia were struggling on that day. But anyways, so moving on to Manju. So what are your memories of watching cricket in Australia over the years?
Yeah, in the previous episode, Varun had pointed out how the score is upside down, like the wickets are written first. So that used to be very fascinating. So like, even though like we usually write bowlers figures like 2 for 63 or something, but the score itself was written like bowlers figures. So that was a different part. And also even the graphics at the screen used to be different. So all these things were unique about broadcasting. And obviously, like more than the cricketing void, you know, the Australia, I feel, is suffering from a broadcasting void. Like once it has moved away from Channel 9, so we don't have those legendary voices anymore. But then so far, Channel 7 has taken over there. So I hope they do a good job. They do justice to the legend of Channel 9.
Yeah. I hope they do, because that's a big thrill to watch a game in Australia. Not only India, Australia, any game which involved Australia, especially for me from a personal point of view, because I'm a huge Ricky Ponting and that era of Australian cricket, a fan of that era. And so I used to really look forward to the overall package. So as you both have mentioned, getting up early, then you have the Star Sports coverage. So it comes on Star Sports. So there won't be too much gap between sessions. I wish actually that Channel 9's lunch show or tea break show, which they do, was telecast in India, but I've seen bits and pieces of it on YouTube, where they do master classes and all that stuff. It's a little bit, of course, here you can't get all the coverage. So, but overall, that would be missed. But I hope that Channel 7 gets some really good voices. So, like, I personally am looking forward to seeing from Indian. Yeah.
The 90s used to be very busy for our experts, because we used to have limited people. So, like, Gavaskar will do a morning show for Channel 9, then rush back to Star Sports. Same time, Sidhu will do something in Hindi for Star Sports and rush back to Channel 9. So, that way they would be shuttling between the broadcasters. That was interesting to, but obviously we would not get the Channel 9 feed. That we'll know because somebody would share that on YouTube later as to, yeah.
So getting into the topic of this episode, that is India's upcoming tour of Australia. So now it has never happened before in Indian cricket history where they are going down under as champions in the ODIs and test matches. In specific test matches, first time ever in their history. Even the last ODI series was won by India in 2018. So, I would want to know from both of you your favorite performances of Indians in Australia. So, for me, I think the emergence of Virat Kohli in 2014. So that comes to my mind, and the doggedness of someone like a Sachin Tendulkar to block out the cover drive in Sydney in 2003-04. So these are some really classic examples and sort of generic ones in test matches. One day I don't have that many, only again one more very obvious option. So, if you ask me, I would say a tie-up between the CB series win in 2008 or Virat Kohli's almost superhuman effort in Hobart to tear apart Dasit Malinga to chase down 330, I guess, in 32 overs. So, it's like unimaginable.
Yeah.
So, I would like to know from both of you, probably one, if there is one specific innings across each format from an Indian player in Australia that stands out. So anyone can start, I guess. Any order is fine.
Yes, Abhinav, you can go.
You can start off, Manju sir.
Okay. Yeah, for me, like VVS Lakshman's 167. Was a good innings because the series was lost and there was not a single bright spot. And he was clonked on the helmet by McGrath and he responded with a full-blooded cover drive. And he played really well. I think he took the opener slot and whatever was available to him, he just ended the debate then and there. So he continued as opener for some time before we found Sehwag at Bloemfontein. So that is one of the sort of turning points for him personally and also as a team. Like, I thought it would be another capitulation and the match would get over before we could go back to school. So, but then it didn't happen. It did carry to the third session later. So that's a good memory which I have in tests. And regarding ODIs, definitely Sachin's twin scores in that final in CB series because there was too much talk about him and big games. So finally he delivered. He was there till the end. And he also kept company by Rohit Sharma with his 66. So these are the, like across test and ODI, these are the ones which stay in the mind.
Nice.
For me personally, I think one is the Sehwag 195. I think that completely the entire narrative of how an opener should bat on the first day of a test match. I think that just reached the entire debate of how openers should be batting on the first day of a test match in the first hour. We've all grown up hearing what Sunil Gavaskar famously said about opening in test cricket, that you give the first hour to the bowlers and the rest of the hours were yours and you wear down the new ball by leaving it outside the office. Strategy of wearing the new ball down by hitting it to all parts of the ground. That is a strategy that has since been adopted by every test playing nation today, that they want that one opener who can go out there and just go and basically start hitting from ball one, basically turn a test match into a bit of a T20 and put the pressure straight onto the bowlers and not give
them.
That is one theory that I have. Second is the Rahul Dravid 233 at Adelaide. I think that was one of the most beautiful exhibitions of batting that I've seen. I mean, especially because it came in a Indian, in a famous India victory. So that is one. Same series, the Sachin, the Sachin Lakshman quartet, but contrast of a Sachin doggedly blocking out a cover drive and Lakshman just putting his wrists all over the Australian, all over the Sydney pitch and basically taking the cleaners. That was that. With me. And special mention for Ajinkya Rahane at the counter attacking hundreds ever scored by an Indian batsman. You know. Yeah,
hello.
Yeah, I'm right here.
Hello.
Yeah, you are there. Yeah, I couldn't hear Raghav in the middle. You were going on about Sachin's 241. After that, we missed that.
Yeah,
part.
That like, is I think some. Half the answer was completely muffled.
Yeah.
I could hear bits and pieces, but
I'll repeat that. So basically, of the sheer doggedness of Sachin trying to block the cover drive out of his game, and of VVS all over that Sydney pitch, and making every Australian bowler basically pay with their life. I mean that partnership was something really, really special to watch. And special mention for that Ajinkya Rahane 100 in the 2014 Boxing Day Test, because that was one of the most glorious counter-attacking centuries by any Indian batsman in recent memory in an overseas test. Because, and especially coming from, exactly, I mean, known for counter-attacking play in test cricket. So I think that was quite special to watch, in fact, for me. So yeah, those are my most special memories of test cricket in Australia.
Yeah, interesting. And to add to that, I think Indians also bought out their rest in Australia from it started in the 2003-04 series, where Sourav Ganguly made a statement at the start of the series that we are not here to make up the numbers. So it was a bold statement to make because as we all know, in 1989-2000, before the match fixing scandal happened, India got humiliated in Australia when Sachin was the captain. So of course, he didn't have a team which is going to even test the Australians on paper. So still, that was a bold statement, and Ganguly backed it up with a scintillating 148 at Gabba, which sadly goes unspoken actually in most of the previews we hear in various portals like Cricbuzz, and people don't talk about Ganguly's batting. The heap praises on his captaincy on that tour, that he was able to muster up a famous win in Adelaide, and how the series was competitive, which every other series has been down. It was not a one-way street. So I just wanted to bring in that aspect as well, and in this question, and then moving on to
So I'm just saying that I think you made a great point about that Ganguly 100 in at Brisbane. I think that that 100 set the tone of that entire series to come. I think impactful innings by an Indian captain in any conditions, in any test match ever. I think he basically went out there and just showed why he said what he said, that India was not to make up the numbers and they were here to possibly go on to try and win the series. And it counted at the time that his country needed him the most. So I think, yes, I think fabulous. It was one of the best episodes, best 100 ever by any Indian batsman in any condition. I think that was a special 100 from, I think, Radha's best ever 100. I think, all his best 100s and anything, that best 100 would probably be the best that he's scored ever.
True. So, even I will be able to get few knocks which come as, in fact, impactful as this one, which he did, which is scored at GABA, because you need, as you say, extraordinary amount of courage to go out and do what he did. And I think one more knock, which before I move on to the next question, one more knock which comes to my mind was, as I had mentioned earlier, Virat Kohli's evolution as a player in 2014, Adelaide, where he almost chased on it, which I would call it somebody who, I'm not a big MS Dhoni fan. So, actually, test matches, he's been pretty poor record, despite taking India to the number one ranking. They predominantly played all their cricket in the sub in Asia, Sri Lanka, Bangladesh, or India. So, personally, I would not say it's a generic thing, but personally, I don't rate the Dhoni that as high as even Kumble, if you ask me, as a test captain. So, he walks out of the series. He could have retired after the series, but the way he retired, to not let that affect his performance. As in, Virat Kohli was just establishing himself. He was not Virat Kohli of 2020 or 2018-19, what you have seen. Dominating world cricket, number one batsman. He was not then. He was almost there in 2014. He took on Australia's bowlers and almost India won the game. So that was great. So I think these two knocks clearly stand out as captain's knocks, I would say, from an Indian perspective, in Australia, giving it back to them than allowing them to dominate. So, I would like to move on to another very interesting
Yes, Raghav? Hello? Hi. We just lost you in the middle for a bit. Yeah, but nothing was lost. Don't worry.
Okay, cool.
Now you're audible. Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, okay, fine. So, as I was saying, so moving on to the next, so that is the, it's a very interesting series, this particular India-Australia series, as it comes right after a IPL season gets over. So, generally, the IPL happens in April, May. And even if India go down under, it's in the same year, but December, January. So, there is a lot of cricket in India, or India may play in Sri Lanka. So, and then they move to Australia. But now it's one bubble to another. So, what intrigues me is the familiarity factor. So, now... Of course, the conditions are going to be different. Hello?
Hi, yes. Hi. There was just a slight cut.
Okay, fine. Yeah. So, I just wanted to bring up the point that the familiarity aspect of having played in the same team. Let's give a classic example. the T20 format. You have Aaron Finch, who has rubbed shoulders with Virat Kohli, and he has got some strategic inputs. He knows how Virat Kohli goes about his game, very closely followed him for RCB, and he's right. After the campaign is over, they are going to play in a T20 series. So certain things like that, how Aaron Finch can attack somebody like Yuzvendra Chahal or even a Washington Sundar and probably silence or not make the spin factor that big against Australia, because there's hardly any gap between the two tournaments. So do you guys sense that could tilt in any team's favor as such, or how big is this factor? Because there are a lot of players who have played in the IPL and predominantly mainly in the limited overs format. Test matches, it's not going to impact much how much our IPL cricket you play. But from purely the T20 and ODI section of this series, how much of a factor would familiarity play in your opinion? Abhinav, what do you think about this?
It will have some sort of impact, but I don't necessarily will go with the fact that Finch will be able to completely negate what the advantages that these guys have, that Washington Sundar or Yuzvendra Chahal, these kind of guys have. So it's going to be a very engaging series. I think it's going to be very interesting to see how does India. Especially seeing how does Kohli plan to match up. Let's be very honest. He really does not inspire much confidence, especially as a T20 captain. Either in IPL or in international cricket, he does not inspire a lot of confidence as a captain in this format. So it's going to be a very interesting challenge to see how he adapts to once again leading the Indian team out. Second will be what kind of tactics that the Indian team does employ. I think the Indian team wants to play the T20 format. I mean, are they planning to play it like an extension of one-day cricket, like they have always done, and pack their team up with a lot of players of a similar strike rate range, I mean in the 120, 125 right. range, or do they want to play the T20 game like a T20 game has to be played? So it really depends on how the coaches combine approaches this, and to be very honest, I do not have much confidence in that combined, especially in limited overs, especially for T20 cricket. I think they really don't have a lot of that does not show a lot of in this format, and I think I just have a sneaky feeling that Australia might edge ahead in the T20 series. Sneaky feeling, but I'll still put India as marginal favorites, but with the caveat that Australia might just sneak it.
Interesting. And I agree on the tactical front. Virat Kohli doesn't. I would not go as far as to say that he doesn't inspire too much. I would still rate him as a good ODI captain. T20 is definitely pretty poor for RCB. I think even more, he kind of was under some control when Dhoni was around. But I think now without Dhoni, I don't know what Virat Kohli is going to throw up. As a player, we can definitely expect runs from him. But I don't know. As a captain, as you said, I don't think...
That Gautam Gambhir made on that ESPN
info, yeah.
Show that actually makes a lot of sense. No captain in IPL history Will has been given a longer rope than Virat Kohli has. Eight seasons, he's gone with just probably two or three playoff finishes.
Just like a few people have also, you know, been highlighted the fact that, you know, is RCB a team or it is just a cabinet of superstars? So that is another debate, Hena. Like that
exactly,
also is there.
But even for India in 20 cricket, he does not inspire a lot of confidence as a captain. I think his tactic on various occasions seemed completely off. For considering the selections, you do feel for somebody like Surya Kumar Yadav not being there on this T20 team, because he would have given the Indian team exactly what they needed from a middle order player, especially coming at number three or in that number three or four slot. Because this year, I think Surya Kumar Yadav, what he's done, he's taken his game to a different level altogether, which I think in T20 cricket neither Shreyas or Manish have been able to do very efficiently.
And
he got 480 runs at a strike rate of 145.
Today he said he hasn't been able to train because he's upset, he's not going to Australia. So it does have an impact on the mental, aspect.
Exactly. Manju sir rightly said, it has a bit of an impact, and somebody like Surya deserved being on that flight. I think giving Sanju Samson another go, I'm not sure whether it's the greatest for ideas or not, because here's the thing. I think Sanju Samson, for all the brouhaha people raise about his talent, he looks like a $1 million when he's in form. He definitely looks like $1 million when he's in form, but that is only for the first 2-3 games of of every IPL. After that, he just falls off. I think I would have still said that Rishabh Pant needed to be there, because one, I think he accepts that he's not in the greatest amount of form, but there's a thing.
And even on Rishabh Pant, like the investment factor also is there. Like, since you have invested so much, you might as well ensure that he becomes what he's destined to.
Exactly. Yes, yes.
Too many months of carrying drinks is not going to help.
It does not inspire. It just takes a lot of how they. These guys have gone about handling a lot of the players. It speaks very poorly of how the kind of messages that a guy like Rishabh Pant is being conveyed. And also says a lot of how we as fans are also kind of responsible for forcing him to curb the natural game that he loves to go about there and go out onto the pitch and basically hit every ball for a six. He's reaped him a lot of rewards on so many occasions, and he's been a much more in IPL in the terms of the IPL and T20. I think he's been a little more consistent than Sanju Samson has. Granted, Sanju hasn't had the greatest amount of international experience, but that's also partly down to the fact that he's not done a lot to justify getting a lot of international experience. I think him being carried to the T20, into the T20 setup, and subsequently shockingly into the one-day team as a reserve keeper, it really shows how messed up India's entire tactical thinking is on the white ball front. It really reflects how messed up they are on the tactical front. Plus, Rishabh Pant, he got ruled out of the white ball team on because of an injury. He got injured in that ODI at the start of the year in Mumbai against Australia.
Yeah.
He's not gotten a white ball game since. And I think the rule generally is that if a player has gone out of the team due to injury, he generally is a favored incumbent to at least try and get his position back. And
right.
To be fair, it's correct. Quite correct. Unfair mm-hmm. that he's been dropped from the white ball setup for. Probably not much of a fault of his. His IPL returns were quite bad, but I think if you've made, like Manju sir said, if you've made that investment on him, you might as well run the whole distance.
It's not that he's become old or anything. He's still in his early 20s and a lot of time is left for him.
Exactly. He's just 20, 21 or 22, I think, now.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, I think I kind of agree with Abhinav's point here. Like, you have invested in a talent like Rishabh Pant, and he can be infuriating, he can frustrate a coach. Like, I would actually, I personally feel he's a Glenn Maxwell of the Indian team. But when both of them get going, no bowling lineup in the current teams to see in world cricket can stop both of these players when both of them get on fire. So they just can take the game away. But some of the shots which they play, especially what you have seen Rishabh Pant in this IPL, Glenn Maxwell throughout this IPL, the kind of shots, some baffling, right, to play a reverse sweep of Jasprit Bumrah. So I don't know what Maxwell was thinking. So certain things like that, I think if you overlook that, there is a lot of talent. And I think you have seriously lot of questions on selections, as I'm baffled with one IPL season in 2019, Kuldeep Yadav has a fallout with Dinesh Karthik. After that, he has not got much chances for India. And shockingly, even when he has got a chance in a T20, he has come in the 16th over ones. I remember. So there is something seriously not, there is no sync, if I had to use the word. There is no sync.
Along with that, about Kuldeep, is like also the status of that shoulder has to be, like, there is nothing being made public regarding that. So what reports had come that after the shoulder injury, he has not been able to bowl at that similar pace which troubled the batsman. So maybe they are all hanging back on the back foot and waiting for him. So that is something also needs to be.
No, if that is the case, then I don't think you should pick him. If you are not confident of his skill, of the stock ball which would get him the wickets, then you can invest in some other spinner. Like, you've seen enough talent in Rahul Chahar to pick him in the T20 squad earlier. And he gets dropped after that. So you can try out different spinners. India is not a country where we have dearth of players. We have enough. We have almost three to four teams apart from the playing 11 waiting in the fringe. So that is, again, adds up to the overall mess which Abhinav was saying
Post-injury, what happened was, like, that surprise factor of the googly was gone. So, like, many of even the West Indian batsmen took their toll, and it seems to land shorter than before, like, not at the same length. So maybe he lost that, the X factor or something. I hope he gets it back, because when on song, he's a very rare. If you see, there have been very few left-arm unorthodox bowlers. So,
yes.
Right.
Taking off from what Manju sir and you have said and tying it up to the entire selection gambit, I mean, the fact that, here's the thing, Kuldeep Yadav, especially in white ball cricket, succeeds when he is paired up with Yuzvendra. You see them pairing up as a duo, you see them feeding off each other's confidence levels. And that makes that duo even more lethal than they already are. But now it took that one bad game in Edgbaston against England on a ground that was definitely never going to support any spinner of any kind on that one short 59-meter boundary where Jason Roy, Johnny Bairstow, and Ben Stokes just kept pummeling the ball. After that, you never see Kuldeep and Chahal being paired up together in a white ball game. I mean, it's shocking that we've come to that. I mean, and Jadeja's pick, I mean, he's a fabulous all-rounder. But sorry to say, I do not, in hindsight, what Sanjay Manjarekar said in that World Cup was absolutely bang on. He's a bits and pieces player who should not be anywhere close to any white ball team for India. With hindsight, I have taken the benefit of hindsight. I
I completely agree with what Sanjay Manjrekar had said about Ravindra Jadeja, because he, that one knock that he played in that semi-final, that basically gave him a free pass to come back into the T20 setup, which, for which he is definitely not suited. Even in this IPL, I mean, he batted like he was with a sense of purpose, and that was good to see. He was hitting the ball clean as a whistle, but his bowling was shockingly abysmal. And I mean, selecting him for a T20 setup, especially for T20 cricket, defies all kind of logic. Especially because you're ignoring performers and specialists for this format. Somebody like an Akshar Patel, who had a very good IPL season with both bat and ball, especially with the ball, and Kunal Pandya, who I think for no fault of his has been dropped from the Indian team. I think having the record for the most number of Man of the Match award, Man of the Match / Man of the Series awards in the shortest space of time.
Yes. He has
got quite a few Man of the Match awards in T20 cricket in a very short space of time. And for no fault of his, he's been dropped after that Bangladesh series. I mean, here's the thing. I think India has misused a player like both Akshar and Krunal Pandya in these sort of formats. Akshar became basically a bit of a stand-in for Jadeja when he could have been slightly better option in white ball cricket. And Krunal certainly is a much better T20 player than Jadeja is. The issue of role parity is something which is huge with the present Indian white ball setup. I mean, neither Kohli nor Shastri give adequate clarity on what kind of a role player is supposed to play in that white ball 11. You have to give him. That's what makes a Mumbai Indians such a successful IPL team. That's what made Chennai Super Kings such a successful team in the IPL, because players had a clear idea of what their role is.
Exactly.
So that in modern day white ball cricket, is the most critical factor that you have to define the roles of a player in your setup. If you've given them the thought process behind that particular role, then that player is able to mold his game according to that. Unfortunately, it does not. That is absolutely not the case with this Indian team, and especially in white ball cricket. And I think, also sees a lot of how, basically, I don't think the selectors also. And all this bunkum that Shastri is raising, that he does not have a say in the selection panel in matters of selection. I mean, it basically is sorry to say the term, it's utter bullshit. As a coach, he does not have a say in matters of selection, then why the hell is he a coach of? Why the blooming hell is he a coach for?
Looking at the selection issues, like how Australia made George Bailey a selector, I think it's time we should make some domestic cricketer also. I think who is playing in the tournament, so he may know better the strengths of the fellow people.
Right now, apparently, the selection committee, because there are 3 vacancies that have come up, so apparently Ajit Agarkar has applied for one of those. I think probably one of the most high-profile names, and he knows a lot of domestic cricket as well, because he has been a former chief of selector for Mumbai as well, Mumbai Cricket Association. So I mean, if he does get selected, he'll be able to really bring.
And with regards to Australia also, he's seen it all. Like, he's had 6 ducks and he has a 6 wicket haul and a Test win. So,
exactly.
He's seen the different sides of the same coin.
Exactly. I mean, unfortunately.
In part 1 of our definitive preview of the India-Australia series, which is scheduled to start in a couple of days' time. We had our guest Abhinav and Manjunath speak on varied topics, such as their favorite performances of Indian players in Australia. The knocks which stood out for me was how Abhinav mentioned the knock of Virendra Sehwag in Melbourne, where he changed the narrative of how a opener bats in the first day of a test match to how brilliant the knock of VVS Laxman in 2000 was. When the series was gone and when India was playing for pride, he pulled out his best. And not surprisingly, he brought out his best game against Australia, be it in Australia or in India. We then moved to more serious topics, which included the familiarity factor, considering the fact that there are two tournaments, that is the IPL and the Tour of India's Tour Down Under, come literally a few weeks in between each other. So how certain players and certain matchups could get nullified, although the conditions are different, were discussed. And most importantly, the absurd and weird selection and the way the management goes about picking the squads for India was discussed in detail, and I completely agree with both the panelists who came on the show that you has absolutely no clarity, and it's very absurd the way you select. Just to put into perspective, people such as Surya Kumar Yadav, Akshar Patel, and even Rishabh Pant or Ishan Kishan don't find a place in either of the squads, that is the T20 or one day team. So what message are you trying to convey to these performers in the IPL when you have built an ecosystem in the last few years, at least from Indian point of view, where you select players in a national team based on their performances in the IPL? So it was a really engaging and engrossing part one of this preview series, preview to the India-Australia series. In part two coming up, we would be hearing more from Abhinav and Manjunath on the importance of role definition and role clarity in selection of squads across formats, to more serious and important topics like Virat Kohli's paternity leave. Thank you.